Welcome to the How Did They Do It Real Estate Podcast. Have you ever wondered how people succeed in real estate and what steps they took to get there? If so, this podcast is for you. Your hosts, Sayla and Eileen Prack, interview top experts in the real estate community to share with you their real estate journey and how they achieved massive success. Our goal is to provide you with valuable real estate resources and to help you apply it to your own real estate goal. Welcome to today's episode of the How Did They Do It Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Eileen Prack. And today we've brought on another fantastic guest for you, Neil Bawa. And he is recognized within real estate circles for his expertise in technology and is highly regarded for his proficiency in data analysis, process management, and outsourcing strategies. He's also referred to as the mad scientist of multifamily. He's also the founder and CEO at Multifamily University, an organization dedicated to providing education on apartment investing. So Neil, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. Welcome, and how are you doing?
Fantastic. Thanks for having me on the show. Very excited to be here.
So Neil, let's just jump into this because you have a lot of insight. You use a lot of data to analyze. You're constantly in the market looking at where the trends are, where we're going within real estate. So give us a top rundown of where do you see the current environment today in multifamily real estate? Where are we kind of headed going into 2024?
Well, as it stands today, and you know, we are seeing an extraordinarily bizarre situation. And in the last few years, the bizarre situations have all been bad. And this is actually an incredibly good bizarre situation. So we have, you know, the 56% of analysts in the United States last year predicted that there would be a recession in 2023. Well, obviously, those 56%, including me, were wrong. And there not only was not a recession, which, you know, given only half the people were convinced, was not much of an eventuality, there also weren't recessionary conditions, right? So if you look at GDP growth last year, it's above average. It was significantly above average, which is astonishingly difficult given the Federal Reserve took an 800-pound hammer and just kept smashing it repeatedly on the economy. And that's what interest rates are. It's basically a big hammer to knock down the economy. And then the Fed helps the economy recover by lowering rates and says, okay, now you can get up. Well, the economy refused to fall. It refused to go down to its knees. And so it's been an astonishingly good year last year. And the same has continued this year. In January 2024, the economy produced more than 300,000 jobs in Jan, which is a stellar number. It's an incredible number anytime. But if you've just been beaten black and blue for 18 months by the Fed and you still produce 300,000 jobs, oh my God, right? That's an astonishing thing. But none of that would mean anything, Eileen, if it wasn't for inflation, because the Fed really doesn't want to beat up the economy. Their job is to actually, you know, grow incomes and grow wages and have price stability. They were only using their massive hammer because inflation was so high. So, you know, June of 2022, inflation's at 9.1%. And at the end of January, inflation's at 2.7%. So the Federal Reserve has done magic that even they would never tell you they could do, which is getting the inflation down from 9.1% to 2.7%. Remember, the historical average is 2, right? So they're almost there, the 90% of the way there. And they've managed to do it with a change in employment only from 3.5% to 3.7%. Now, the truth is, the Federal Reserve doesn't deserve the kudos. What, you know, the kudos are deserved by a bunch of other things, right? Especially changes in supply chain, you know, which have basically brought this down. I think what the Fed's done, its interest rates have affected one vertical, one industry the most, and that's the industry that Eileen Prack is in, right? Real estate. So what the Fed has done is by pushing down interest rates, they have pushed down rents, right? So rent growth has been anemic. So in the last 12 months, rent growth in the US was positive, but it was tiny. It was like 0.5% or something like that. Normally is 3 to 6%, right? So, you know, by pushing down rent growth, we managed to get the biggest component of inflation down. So most people don't know this, but the biggest component of inflation is simply housing, right? Nothing comes close. Food, gas, these are all much smaller than housing. And so by pushing housing costs down or flattening them out, we managed to get inflation down to this level. So I don't know how much of the credit goes to the Fed, but a significant portion goes to the Fed. So now we have this shockingly unlikely Goldilocks zone where the economy is producing 300,000 jobs, unemployment rate is 3.7%, inflation is down to 2.7%, and the Fed has now finally, thank God, made both written and verbal statements that their entire focus is on cutting rates. So Jerome Powell actually appeared in a very rare interview. He's a chairperson of the Fed. He did that in an interview. I think it was CNBC or somebody like that. And basically acknowledged that all of their discussions are about when to cut rates. They've already agreed to cut rates, but the question is, everyone has to agree to on when to cut. That might happen either in the March meeting or the May meeting. There's no meeting of the Federal Reserve in April. So I fully expect that we will see our first rate cut in May. And if something unusual happens between now and the March meetings, let's say a big bank goes out, then they might just, you know, do a little sample cut in March just to make the market feel a little bit better. So we have this highly, highly unusual situation. And before I hand it back over to you, I'll say that you have to contextualize it with distress and discounts and price reductions in the multifamily space that we've seen in over the last, let's call it 20 months. And that gives us a sense of where things are likely to go over the next, you know, the rest of this year and also 2025.
So if we've seen all these positive metrics going up, indications that inflation has come down significantly, job growth, positive news coming out from the feds, where was all this fear and all this like calamity coming from then over the past, you know, 2 years or so that the recession is coming, the market's going to be distressed and things like that?
Firstly, I think the good news has really only been coming in the last 6 months, right? So a lot of the inflation reduction has happened in the last 6 months. The job market has stayed strong in the last 6 months where it was predicted to weaken. So really, we've had 6 months of good news. The second piece that you should be aware of is the properties that are distressed, they're still distressed, right? But I want you to understand the statement that I'm about to make, right? With 20 million apartment units in the United States, if every building was 200 units, there's 100,000 buildings. 3,000 buildings are distressed. 3,000 buildings are at risk of going back to the bank. That's 3% of the multifamily market. It's extremely important to understand that 3% of the multifamily market is distressed. So bottom line is, all the stuff that you hear in the media and in the real estate news websites is always going to be negative, because it's proven that human beings like reading negative news. If you put a positive article out, it'll get 100 views. You put a negative article out, it might get 1 million views and, you know, go viral on Twitter or X, right? So we like talking about negative stuff. And it's okay. It's you want to obviously know about all the negative stuff. But what people don't understand is that you also have to actually go out there and get the real non-biased information, where people are not trying to get clicks, where people are not trying to get, you know, thumbs up on whatever their articles is. And they're actually trying to get to data. So, and what people assume is, because all the news is negative, there must not be any positive news. And that's just, in this case, complete BS, right? There's an incredible amount of positive news. This doesn't change the fact that the 3,000 properties that are distressed are still distressed. Nothing that the Federal Reserve or the economy have done in the last 6 months or 12 months makes these properties even slightly less distressed. Also, because 2024 is the year where incoming supply in the United States is at its peak. So in every cycle, every real estate cycle, 5-year, 10-year cycle, there is a peak year for rents and a peak year for supply. The peak year for rents is usually before the peak year for supply. So the peak year for rents was 2022. That's when rent growth was ridiculous, 10, 15%, depending upon the market. Last 12 months, it was effectively zero, right? So that wave has crested, and now we have this peak supply wave. And 2023, last year, 2024, this year, are the two peak supply years. So that supply is concentrated in all of the hot markets, right? So, you know, markets in Texas, like Houston, Austin, Dallas, markets in Florida, like Orlando, you know, got Nashville, Phoenix, you know, these markets are where the supply is concentrated. And so all of these markets are expected to have negative rent growth in 2024, this year. But the vast majority of the United States, including the Midwest and the Northeast, are expected to have positive rent growth because they don't have that incoming supply. So the reason we are, you know, to answer your question, the reason we continue to hear about this negative buzz is, first is, it's real. There's 3,000 properties that are distressed, and we can talk about what their likely outcome is. So that's real. and the fact that it is unlikely that any of the hot markets in the United States, any of the booming markets in the United States, are going to see any positive rent growth this year. That's very unlikely at this point in time, because of the fact that this is the year when massive amounts of supply delivers. And then supply drops in 2025, and then there's a huge drop in 2026. Because remember, 2023, interest rates were high, so less apartment builders started new apartments, so the 2026 delivery is low. So 2026 is the logical exit year for people that are in multifamily today.
So with 2024 being the peak supply year, does that lend itself to more opportunities for people looking to get into and purchasing properties at deep discounts?
Absolutely, 100%. And I here's the thing. Let's say that there was no supply, or, well, I don't want to say that. Let's say that the supply was normal. It wasn't elevated. Even then, I think 2024 would have gone down in history as one of the best entry point years into the multifamily market space. It would have gone down in history, and I'll explain why in detail. But that would have happened even if supply was not elevated, right? So in those 15, 20 top hot markets, you're actually getting even better deals. Because when you have negative rent growth and you're out there to sell your property, you're going to get a lower price, right? So for a moment, let's step back and say, why is 2024 such a great year? Well, to do that, I want to contrast the two big real estate markets. The first market, which is the largest, is single family. The second market, which is a bit smaller than it, but more powerful, more institutional, is multifamily. Data from Freddie Mac, which is the second largest lender in the United States, indicates that home prices in the US have gone up since COVID started. So 3.5 years, a little more than 3.5 years. The prices have gone up by a stunning 40%+, right? Home prices, 40%+. What's interesting is most people then assume that their mortgage payments have gone up 40%. No, interest rates have more than doubled in 3.5 years for single family. So they've gone from 3.5% to a little over 7%, so more than double. And as a result, the average home payment in the United States has gone from 1,026 roughly to about 2,050, more than double, actually almost 2,100. So there is a 111% increase in the average mortgage in the United States in 3.5 years. 111%. Obviously the next question for Freddie Mac was, well, how much have wages gone up, salaries gone up? Well, they've gone up by 19.7%. So salaries are going up 19.7%, but your mortgage is going up 111%, making single family the most unaffordable in history. Never in history a single family being more unaffordable than it is at the beginning of 2024. Never, absolutely never. And you might say, why aren't home prices crashing? They haven't gone down, they haven't gone up. They've been flat, basically. If you look at them over the last 18 months, they're pretty much flat. Might be up like 1%. And the answer is lock-in effect. We have tens of millions of homeowners like me locked in. I'm locked in at 1.75%. So if I go sell my McMansion and go and buy another McMansion, I'm going to be paying 7.5% up from 1.75%. Right. So obviously that makes no sense for me to leave. So even if my wife is, screaming and yelling at me, I'm absolutely, not going to just ignore that. So now you have tens of millions of American families locked in to their homes because of extraordinarily low interest rates, many of them 3%, 2.5%. And then so they're not going anywhere. So the amount of inventory in the market is small, which is basically meaning that home prices, instead of going down, which they should be going down, are flat. Right. And so what has happened is none of this stuff that I just discussed has happened for multifamily. So multifamily prices have been declining very smoothly because multifamily is a business and there's a bank and it looks at you buying a multifamily as you buying a business. So it says, hey, interest rates are going up. When interest rates are going up, your property must be worth less. I'm going to reduce the amount of the loan. No lender ever does that for single family. For single family is an emotional purchase. And they say, as long as there's an appraisal for a property next to yours, I can give you the same amount of money. Right? So that's why single family has stayed the same, even though value should have dropped. Single family is ridiculously, absurdly overvalued at this point in time. Remember, the average mortgage payment has doubled. The average salaries have gone up by 19.7%. So a question comes up. If multifamily is so rational that its prices have smoothly declined as interest rates have gone up, shouldn't the rents in the last 3.5 years also match the wages, the salaries? The answer is they match them exactly. According to Freddie Mac, salaries in the US went up 19.6% and then 19.7%. Rents in the United States went up 19.6, 19.7, 19.6. So here you have a rational market. People's salaries, as they go up, they pay more rent. And then you have a completely, ridiculously irrational market of single family, where stuff, you know, the mortgage is going up 111%, even though salaries are going up 19.7. So at this point, multifamily has actually behaved like a rational market by decline in prices. And you're seeing that 20%+ decline in prices. Now, nothing bad has happened in the multifamily market. Remember, 100,000 buildings, only 3,000 in distress. Occupancy, we're at 94.5% in the US. That's fine. It's, you know, the historical average is 94, so we're slightly above that. The short-term historical average was 95, so we're half a point below that. So either way, occupancy is phenomenally strong in the United States. As you can see by that 19.7, 19.6 example, as wages go up, rents go up. Well, as it happens, the United States right now has positive wage growth incomes. Positive incomes mean that incomes are rising faster than inflation. Remember, inflation was at 9%, wages were at 2%, so that's negative, right? And then inflation comes down, 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 comes all the way down to 2.7, but wages are growing at 3.5. So now there's a gap where people have positive income growth. And positive income growth means that rents can grow quickly. Not in 2024 because of that supply thingy, but that's a one-time thing that'll go away. But we have conditions for rent growth. And when we have conditions for rent growth, that elevates the prices of your property. So bottom line is this: 2024 is likely to see the lowest prices in multifamily for a while, but it is very likely that there will be a quick rebound in prices in 2025. The Fed will cut 3 times this year. That's what they're saying. The market thinks that they'll cut 4 times this year. If they cut 4 times this year, that's 100 basis points. That should make a tremendous difference to cap rates. Probably not this year, once again, because of the incoming supply, the 3,000 properties that have to be sold, distressed properties. But by 2025, the distressed properties have been sold. The supply is gone. Rent growth is positive. And now there's nothing keeping cap rates from compressing again, compressing cap rates, higher prices. So the window of opportunity in multifamily is this year. And everything's green, right? Unemployment rates are green. The GDP is growing very quickly. So you have this bizarre environment, which I haven't seen in my career, where everything is green, but prices are low. Because they're only low because of interest rates. And we know that those interest rates are about to go down. So you have this window of opportunity that's 12 months. And we can talk about why investors are still scared. But hopefully this gives you kind of this picture of why I consider 2024 to be one of the best entry points that I've seen in my career.
So what are you doing and what are other investors, real estate investors in this space doing in order to prepare themselves and position themselves to capitalize on the opportunities that will be coming down in 2024?
Well, my job right now is really, really simple. I mean, it's really, really hard from an investor perspective because investors are scared, but otherwise it's really simple. I'm just buying properties that have fixed loans and I'm assuming them. So remember, the only reason prices are down, the only reason is interest rates. So if you assume a loan that's locked in for the next X number of years, call it 5 years, then you haven't dealt with the bad side, which is high interest rates. Today, if I was to buy a new, you know, property, I'd probably end up with a 6%+ loan. So if I can assume loans at 4% or 5%, I don't have that negative side. I know my loan is fixed, it's fixed for a number of years. If I can get interest only, like my last property has interest only, then my cash flow is also higher. So I'm simply avoiding the downside and getting the benefit, which is much lower prices. And I think anyone who is rational would be doing that, but investors are not because they're scared.
What drives the fear in them, especially if you're seeing all this green and all this positivity come in over the last couple months, that would carry into 2024. But is it what the media is telling them, what they're being exposed to, that's causing this hesitation or fear getting into real estate?
I'd be disappointed that with all this technology and all this news and all this information that's really at our fingertips, and you know, you could spend 30 minutes on an iPad and learn pretty much everything that I've just told you. All investors care about is what their friends are saying and what they're seeing at properties that they've invested in. So what they're probably seeing is cash calls, zero cash flow and prediction that there will be zero cash flow for the rest of this year. That's what they're seeing. Those are real things. But I think what they don't understand is those apply to the properties that they invested in 2020, 2021, 2022, and maybe even 2023, a little bit of 2023, maybe at least the first half. That doesn't apply to today. Simply because if today you're able to get a property with a fixed rate, hopefully with interest only, and you're able to get the discounts that you're getting, the very things that are causing those cash calls, the very things that are causing that lack of cash flow have been taken away. There's only a plus side today because you're getting discounts, right? There isn't a downside. The downside was when you invested a year or 2 years or 3 years ago. Those are the properties that are hit. But most investors are speculators. They like to think of themselves as investors. They really are not. And so speculators look at the past or their past experience and use that as a benchmark for the current. Instead of doing research on where the current market is, they say, if things have been bad for the last 18 months, they will continue to be bad. The reality of investing, Eileen, is if things have been bad for the last 18 months, this is probably a great time to invest.
And what goes down must come up.
Exactly. Eventually, will come up, right? And you've got to be patient. The other thing that is over the last 5 years, multifamily properties have exited in 2 to 3 years, which is an outrageously short amount of time. So investors have become very used to, just like, you know, we're used to watching, you know, shorts on Instagram and YouTube shorts. We're thinking somehow multifamily is a short-term investment. And now that people, syndicators like me, are saying, hey, the chances that we will exit in less than 5 years is very small because we're taking on fixed loans. These loans are very difficult to get out of. And so this, you're going to be along with us on a five-year journey. Well, that's freaking investors out, even though what I'm saying should be music to their ears.
So Neil, are you still focusing on the same markets, or are there other markets that you're now expanding into based off of the environment and what you're seeing in the rent increases and declines in certain markets?
So towards the end of this year, I want to go back to the hot markets. I want to give the hot markets another 11 months to fall. Why? I know they'll fall for two reasons. A disproportionately large portion of those 3,000 distressed properties are in the hot markets. And a disproportionately large portion of the incoming supply is in the same markets. This means that the prices of multifamily in those markets will get hammered down the most by the end of this year. 2025 is the start of a new cycle, right? If we lower interest rates in 2024 and then keep lowering them in 25, that starts a new cycle. Hopefully not as mad and crazy or as, you know, nuts as the 2022 cycle, but that was caused by COVID, you know, which is a black swan event. So I want to be buying in my favorite markets. You know, I named some of them, you know, the Texan markets, you know, Florida, Orlando, you know, Nashville, Phoenix, Boise, these kinds of, you know, amazing markets. I want to buy there, Atlanta. But I want to wait until the end of this year because I think that the hot markets do not get to the bottom until the end of the year. Whereas the other markets where there's positive rent growth, for example, like the Midwest, and then smaller markets like Chattanooga. I'm buying in Chattanooga right now. That's the fourth largest market in Tennessee, right? So I'm avoiding Nashville because it has huge supply coming in. And then Knoxville because it has some supply coming in as well. Memphis is not a favorite market of mine because there's no population growth. So I'm going after smaller markets for the moment. So I'm looking at markets like Chattanooga. I'm looking at Raleigh, which still has positive rent growth. Raleigh is an exception to the hot market rule in that it has positive rent growth because its absorption has been phenomenal, right? So I'm still looking in Raleigh, you know, and looking for reasonable prices, and I'm continuing to build. So right now, the best deal in America right now is land, not buying land, but squatting on land. So, you know, if you want to get into that, I'll explain more. So that's really what I'm up to. So for the moment, I'm staying away from the hot markets. I expect to massively accelerate my purchases there at the end of this year.
So we are coming out on time, and I want to be respectful of your time too, Neil. But can you touch on that really quickly at a high level? You know, what do you mean by squatting on land?
Buying land was hard 2 years ago. If you wanted to buy a piece of land in Austin, you had to close on it in 90 days. And even if you tried to get a $1 discount, they would laugh at you. Today, I make offers at 40% below list price. and I give them a contract that says I have 6 months for investigation, 6 months for 12 months for government approvals, you know, permits and entitlement, and 3 months of extension. That's 21 months, Eileen. And if at any point of time I don't get governmental approval, I can just walk away with my deposit. This is called land squatting. I'm currently squatting on absolutely enormous amounts of land, putting 50,000 here and 100,000 there and 50,000 here. I'm basically squatting on land that when built will be in the $300-400 million range. This strategy could not have existed even 15 months ago, but today it works. Land squatting.
And are they in the same markets as you're purchasing the multifamily or looking at the same time?
Generally, though, not 100% of the time, right? So when you're building, you're more sensitive to incoming supply because all incoming supply is new construction, right? And so your new construction will then end up competing against those. So some of the markets have too much supply. So even if it's a smaller market, if there's too much supply, then I don't build there. I might buy there because Class C doesn't compete against Class A as much or immediately.
Neil, where can the listeners find out more about you and what you're doing?
So we disseminate an enormous amount of data-driven information. I think Eileen knows about this well. And it is at a website called multifamilyu.com. So multifamily followed by the letter u.com. We have about 25,000 registrations for our webinars. Our most popular webinar is actually in February. It's called Real Estate Trends 2024. And then throughout the year, we do webinars, we do events, we do kind of webcasts on interesting stuff that's going on in the real estate industry. So you can come join there. We have no educational programs. We have no upsell. There's no subscription. Just come join and enjoy the beauty of data.
Neil, thank you so much for all of your insight today. I really appreciate it. And thank you so much for the conversation, Neil.
You're welcome.
And thank you for listening to our podcast today, brought to you by Bonavest Capital. We would really appreciate it if you can go to iTunes right now and leave a rating and written review. Also, please don't forget to subscribe so you can always get the latest episodes. You can also connect with us on Facebook, How Did They Do It Real Estate. We'd love to hear your feedback and any topics that you're interested in for future episodes. If you're anything like Zayla and me and believe that real estate investing is a great way to create passive income and build long-term wealth, check out our free apartment syndication due diligence checklist for passive investors at bonavestcapital.com/checklist. Zayla and I created this checklist for ourselves as we evaluated different multifamily syndication opportunities as a passive investor. So we would love to share it with you so you can use it as a resource as well. Download your free copy today at bonavestcapital.com/checklist. Lastly, to learn more about us, you can go to bonavestcapital.com and fill out the contact us page so you can speak to us directly. Nothing on the show should be considered as specific personal advice. Please consult your legal, tax, and real estate professionals for individualized advice.